Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hello, I'm Matt Jolly. This is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, after I discovered that my local Tesco self-service checkout sounds quite a lot like Rishi Sunak, it got us thinking about political impressions. So I'm joined by, well, literally the best possible lineup of impressionists, John Coleshaw, Rory Brenner and Deborah Stevenson, rating your impressions and giving us a guide to, you know, how to do a Rishi Sunak, a Keir Starmer, a Angela Rayner. Does anybody need a Bridget Phillipson? We'll do that in our big thing. Before that, the columnists, India Knight and James Marriott on protesting outside MPs' homes and our fake flowers naff. And of course, we'll take a look at what we learned this week. And if you like what you hear on the podcast, you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits live on Times Radio, on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. Now, every Friday on the podcast, I like to take a look at what we learned this week. But now we've got the WhatsApps, I thought we'd take a look at what we learned this week from you on the WhatsApps. We learned that Times Radio listeners are the most Times Radio people, like Elizabeth Ann.
Hiya, Matt. I'm just currently bleaching the tea stains out of my cups.
And Amanda.
I am eating an Activia yoghurt with prunes and chia seeds. And then I'm going to plant my petunias.
And Ian.
And thought I'd tell you that I'm feeding my cavapoos toasted blueberries. They love it.
And we learned that four-year-old fan of the show Cordelia is still listening.
I like your show.
Because it's interesting. Yeah, we learned that Perry did not become a pilot.
I was sick in every aircraft I ever flew in. Not something I'm sure everyone else has achieved. Not much testing for this when I applied to become a pilot. They basically got me to stand on one leg at Biggin Hill, and that was that for motion sickness. So there it is. As you may have guessed, I didn't graduate as a pilot.
We learned what questions you'd like to ask at PMQs.
Mr. Sunak, what do you think your legacy will be?
Is three Weetabix acceptable in the morning, or do we just stick to two?
Hello, Mr. Prime Minister. Rishi Sunak, how would you respond to the question, how does it feel to be out of your depth in the shallow end?
Mr. Speaker, does the Prime Minister agree that cheese and onion is the best flavour of crisp?
And we learn that David in Belper has got too much time on his hands. And if you want to WhatsApp me, the number is 0333 003 2353. Put Matt or Politics Like the Boring Bits in the message so we can find it amongst all the others. That's 0333 003 2353. Now this.
The columnists with Knight at the Marriott, India Knight and James Marriott.
I was hunched on my bedroom floor of my laptop, frantically battering away at my column.
And here they are. Hello, India Knight.
Hello, good morning.
And hello, James Marriott.
Good morning.
We got both dressed the same today.
So I black, extremely fashionably.
Extremely fashionably. Black trousers, black shirt.
Never goes out of style.
No.
The whole office will be dressed like this next week.
We could be waiters in a gastropub.
We could be running a gastropub together. And I think if we left the office, that is what people would assume about us. And I'm not sure it would be a very successful or particularly well-run gastropub.
If we went to a gastropub now, someone would ask us to see a menu.
Very good. I'm glad we sorted that out. Good. Let's talk about this extraordinary story at the front of the Times today, this investigation into door-to-door. People are going door-to-door raising money for charity. In particular, the fundraising regulator has launched an investigation after it found that people raising money for the Great Ormond Street Hospital charity were using, well, they were taught pressure-selling techniques. So an Undercover Times reporter was trained by IBA Global, and then a third part, which is a third-party marketing firm, tried to persuade people to sign up for repeat donations when they go around knocking on doors. Here's an example of what they found.
I don't think I can commit. I can just give one off.
Well, thank you so much for wanting to help.
Yeah.
A few people said they want to give a one-off, like £100, £150, stuff like that, which is good.
So sorry.
We're not looking for 4, 5, or 10 years. We'd appreciate if you could try and help us out for just 1 year. So £10 a month, just for 1 year, please. Can you try to help us with that?
What did you make of this, Indy? Did you get a lot of this where you are?
No, I don't. I think it's really shocking. Mm. I think it's absolutely appalling to seek to manipulate people in this way. People who are kind enough to be willing to make any kind of donation in the first place. I think it's particularly appalling that the charity in question is Great Ormond Street, which is not short of money. You know, my daughter had a relationship, a medical relationship with Great Ormond Street until she was 18. And I've been to lots of kind of fundraisers and things for Great Ormond Street. Great Ormond Street is not short of money, but generally the principle, whether it's Great Ormond Street or somebody else, is really appalling, really appalling. Not very many people give to charity. The ones that do ought to be garlanded with flowers, not pressured into upping their donations to a point where they can't afford however much money they're being asked for. It's really awful.
One senior fundraiser admitted to creating the impression that he was deaf to get householders to answer the door, calling it very cheeky, and said he could make himself cry, James. I mean, this is beyond sort of, you know, would you mind giving money to church? This is properly cynical, exploited. And all of the data shows it's people with the least amount of money who give the most as a proportion.
Yeah, it's really grotesque, and it's a kind of uncomfortable reminder, because you want to think that charities do good in the world and therefore kind of everything they do is good and ethical, but that's clearly kind of in this instance almost the opposite of the case. I mean, I think it's a great investigation, because I think there are a lot of people who just would always give a charity the benefit of the doubt. If they were treated like this, it would feel like, oh, well, the problem must be me. I mustn't be, you know, doing enough if they're really pressuring me into it. And I think this is probably, I don't know, hopefully for at least some people, a bit of a kind of, you know, reassuring and clarifying report. It's kind of, you're not bad for not wanting to be pressured into giving like loads of money every single month.
I mean, the thing that we should stress is that this is an independent company, a third-party company, IBA Global, where the people that they hire are paid on commission. So obviously, if you're the one who's doing that as a job, you're under so much, but you know, literally how much money you earn depends on how many old ladies you can twist the arm.
And the fact is, this kind of independent company kind of makes you think that whatever ethics should be at the heart of a charity have maybe kind of got a bit lost, and that hasn't been transferred to this, you know, the company that's done the training, which is, I mean, not an unusual case, I guess, with those things.
In one case, a struggling fundraiser admitted signing up someone who'd been smoking cannabis in a breach of the rules. And in response to the findings, IBA Global said it operated a strict policy of reasonable persuasion only on doorsteps, and said the instances highlighted by the Times have been taken out of context, which I'm not quite sure what the context is. I mean, the context is this is what they said.
Yeah, I don't know what context, being pretending to be deaf to squeeze money out of people is really acceptable.
But the point that you were making, India, is this is a massive charity with loads of money. Ultimately, it's a hospital.
Yeah, it's a really, really well-funded, prosperous hospital, unless things have changed since the last time I looked, which I don't think they have. Mm. I just think it's so rapacious and awful. As you say, it's the poorest people who donate the most money. And I feel that that's really, really central and should be borne in mind. Mm. You know, the idea that you can apply these kind of hard sell techniques, which are horrible in any context, to people who are kind and who are being kind and who are doing an altruistic thing is really revolting. And also, I know it's just this training company, but presumably this training company wouldn't exist if it wasn't employed, you know, if its techniques weren't used more broadly. So, no, horrible.
Well, I'm sure there'll be plenty more comment on that today. Let's turn our attention to the question of, should demonstrations outside MPs' offices, Parliament, even council chambers be banned, as suggested by Lord Walney in the Times today. Lord Walney, of course, John Woodcock, former Labour MP, now the government advisor on political violence and disruption. He says the intimidation of MPs over their position on the Israel-Gaza conflict must stop. He's written for the Times today, and he was on Times Ready Breakfast.
When these areas are being targeted, not simply by people making their point, but the kind of angry, aggressive protests, demonstrations that are designed not actually to further debate, but to intimidate people with an implied sense of threat, to intimidate parliamentarians into doing their bidding and backing down, that for me is unacceptable. We're on the wrong side of the line, and we're actually risking corroding our liberal democracy rather than actually protecting it.
James, what do you think about this? Because we don't want MPs to be going about making their decisions on the basis of fearing for their own safety. But the ability to protest outside Parliament or a council building is quite a central part of being a democracy, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I have to say, I'm always very kind of nervous about these proposals to restrict things like the right to protest. I just think that's too important. And when you start, you know, chipping away at stuff like that, I just think that's a road you don't particularly want to go down, especially protest outside Parliament, which that is just every country of the democracy in the world. You should be, you know, allowed to have protests outside the centre of that democracy. I think the timing also should make us a bit, you know, suspicious of it, because I think it's often these, you know, these new rules that are introduced in the aftermath of what feels like a kind of horrible crisis, and people perhaps, you know, are thinking a bit more emotionally than they should, are the things that you often, you know, end up regretting.
Yeah, you shouldn't pass a law, you know,
in a kind of mood of sort of hysteria and anxiety. Although I obviously completely get, you know, the concerns about MP safety.
And obviously, one of the things we did see this week, India, was this projection on the Tower of Big Ben, where from the river to the sea was projected onto Parliament, and some Conservative MPs accusing the police of allowing that to happen and allowing the threats to be made against MPs. Is it hard to draw the line on this, India?
No, I think it's really simple. Generally, I think protest outside public buildings like council chambers or Parliament are absolutely fine and are what should be happening. I think protests outside individuals' homes are completely out of order, and outside constituency offices, because constituency offices sounds like it's a kind of, you know, hive of activity and there's millions of people milling about. Often a constituency office has one person in it, often a woman, who's just slogging on doing the casework, i.e. the stuff that actually helps constituents.
Yeah.
So I don't think those people should be intimidated either. And I think the idea, I think, you know, the thing about abuse and intimidation, one of the reasons I feel really, really sorry for young people who have never known the world without the internet is that they don't have any experience of a life without abuse, online abuse. Yeah. You know, it's become completely normalized. It's become, quote, part of life. And even if you're a very young person, even if you're like 11 or 12 or 13, you're expected to be able to cope with it. And that idea has become normalized, and it's not normal. People should not go about their daily life at school or at work or in the commons or wherever thinking that abuse is just a thing that happens and it's normal and it's fine. It's really, really not fine. So I think separating out people's private, you know, I mean, it's just two MPs have been murdered in the last 10 years. People have partners, children, stuff going on. And I think standing outside their house, even silently, is obviously intended to intimidate, obviously. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
So, yeah, time and a place.
But also, I suppose, MPs and peers in this case need to be very careful not to look like they're using that to...
Yes.
Crack down on legitimate
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's turn our attention to something slightly more serious. India, what have you got against fake flowers?
I wrote about fake flowers on my Substack because there was a piece in the FT, the kind of, you know, glamorous elitist FT, last weekend saying that fake flowers were okay, that they weren't naff, that they weren't horrible, that they were in Kensington Palace and in Dior and Chanel in Paris, and that, you know, they'd sort of come into their own. And I have a kind of grave difficulty with them, because although I get that they've become very, very good and very, very realistic, they're still not real. And I think the idea, and the whole point of flowers is that they're alive, you know. So the idea of having something inert and basically dead made of plastic and silk in your house to replace fake flowers is really, I kind of can't get past it. I sort of, it would be really practical, like in dusty spare rooms, but I can't get past their fakeness. So I wrote a thing about it, and lots of people had views.
I bet they did. I'm with you. I just can't, because I think, because it's also, it's the association with sort of, like you said, your nan's spare room, or sort of naff public toilets.
They don't look like that anymore.
They have got better, but you just can't. I'm so tempted, if you talk about going into a restaurant, maybe we need to be doing this in our gastropub jokes, but if you go in and there's like some flowers or a plant on the table, the first thing I do is see if it's real.
Yeah, and if it's all plastic cactus, you're just like, it's a bit depressing. Yeah. Our gastropub would never do that.
No, we won't be doing that. Where do you start? The other thing that I think that I just can't cope with, fake flowers in churchyards.
Yeah, just think a bit, you know, beautiful live things made of plastic is just a bit depressing, isn't it?
And in graveyards, they're always kind of colours you don't see in nature. You know, they're always like...
blue.
Bright blue, yeah.
And then they sort of fade and get sort of like mildewy.
They get bleached, and they go a bit green.
And there's also the sort of the subconscious part of me thinking, well, you've done it so you don't have to come back as often.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Plant some bulbs.
Bulbs,
and then they come back every year.
Exactly,
bulbs.
Lovely. Bulbs. More bulbs, fewer flowers. Fake flowers. Fake flowers, very good. Harry's just been in touch. So my partner almost joined one of these third-party fundraising companies after leaving university. She had a trial for one day and absolutely hated the atmosphere. They were taught psychological tricks to pressure people in supermarkets and on streets to sign up for direct debits for charities. And they had a gong that they rung at the end of every day, like in Wolf of Wall Street. As you moved up the company ladder, you earned a portion of your team's commission, which meant lower down the ladder team members were doubly pressured by their team leaders looking to increase their own share of their commission. They prey on vulnerable people who A, need work, and B, wish to donate to charity. So thank you for that, Harry. Lots of people getting in touch, and there are blue flowers in nature. So apologies for that, because I suggested otherwise. I think the point is that sometimes fake flowers...
There are blue flowers in nature, but not like luridly, violently blue flowers that hurt your eyes.
Because you sometimes see the real flowers have been spray painted in.
Yes, in the ones you get in supermarkets, yeah.
Anyway, let's move on from that. James, you've been writing about the North. You wrote this week, why the South now just ignores the North, after this clip resurfaced of the actress and vice president of WADA, Cynthia Erivo.
Some cities are wonderful. Yeah. Other cities are not so wonderful. Mm. So you go to like Manchester and it's incredible because it's like, it feels like London, really and truly. You go to Liverpool, there's like a feeling about everybody talks like that. So the accents are different. So you're listening to everyone and you're like, what's that? What's that sound you're making? It's different. And then you go to Sunderland and you're like, where the f- am I? I don't know where I am. This is... not where I live.
God, people are awful, aren't they, James?
Yeah, I mean, although I don't sound like it, I am a northerner. And yeah, this is completely infuriating. Even though I'm from Newcastle and we have a traditional rivalry with Sunderland, so I should feel happy to hear Sunderland being dissed. Yeah, I just can't really think of any other kind of, you know, where else would be acceptable to talk about people like that. And people just laugh along with it and it's fine to, you know, call a place that's actually very poor and, you know, in many parts and disadvantaged and just laugh at it. I don't get it at all.
And the point that you were making is that a certain type of southerner or Londoner saying things, oh, Manchester's nice because it's quite a lot like London. As if, like,
oh, my
it's
God,
only
don't
acceptable.
Even get me started. So annoying.
Well, let's now speak to a real-life Liverpudlian who, unlike James, hasn't sought to assimilate by adopting a posho accent. The poet Roger McGough. Hi, Roger.
Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Do you feel like the South has forgotten the North?
It's strange. It's funny enough, Matt. I've just come back from last night a gig in Faversham Festival.
Oh, the Literary Festival. I'm there tonight.
I know you are.
Were they nice?
I was there last night. listen, you're in for a treat. It was great.
Good.
Really good. Really great time. So I was in Faversham last night. And after the show, really good. Big, huge audience. Matt, you know, huge, but anyway, doing the book signing. And so people come up and they, you know, say, hello, hello, hello. Now, somebody would say, oh, hello, Roger, you don't remember me, do you? Or you signed my book when I was at school in Manchester. Remember the so-and-so school? I go, no, I don't remember. That was in, 1976. but everybody came up. And most, you know, people were from Liverpool, people from Manchester, people from, you know, Southampton, people from Faversham, most people all over the country. That's the point you're getting.
Yeah.
This time last week, I was in Beverley, in East Yorkshire, a lovely little town in Beverley. Same thing, Beverley Festival. After the show, people come and say, hello, Roger, you know, do you remember me from Liverpool? I was there in 1990. You know, I go, oh, good, very good. Lovely people signing books. They're all people from, I say, you're local, you live in Beverley? No, we're from London. No, we moved there.
They moved,
and this is what happened. This wasn't the same when I started off doing book signings many, many years ago, you know. Things have changed. I mean, I'm here at the moment, just arrived at Penguin, and I've got this book coming out in June, my collected poems, 1959 to 2024. And the difference between when I was 20, just leaving university, when I was in 1959, and now is amazingly different. Things have just moved on and changed. You know, so it's not just... scousers and wacky scousers. And the wacky scousers are all over.
There is something in India. James made this point in his column that there was a time when sort of, you know, maybe it's just nostalgia, but the sort of Manchester thing, like it was cool to be Northern in a way that it doesn't feel quite the same, you know, whether it's to do with music or TV or arts.
Yeah. Well, I would go back when I was 1959, I was coming out of university, came straight from university. I went to university, working class. As you know, working class lads, girls, go to university, you'd have to pay for it. We got a free education. You come back to Liverpool at the time when it was all kicking off. You know, yeah. we had the Beatles, and the world was looking at Liverpool as Ginsberg said, centre of the universe. And then, of course, while this was happening in the 60s, of course, in here and in Carnaby Street and everywhere, it was going on in Sheffield and Birmingham and Newcastle. There was a flowering of music and art. At the same time, the pits started to close, the docks were closing. You're behind the sort of all the balloons going off and the music. Things were closing down, things were changing. And then there was the 70s, and then it was, you know, we know what happened then. And things have just changed.
What do you think, India?
I think that it's only people who live in London who think that London is cool. When you move out of London, you realise that that is not at all a universally accepted view, and that quite a lot of people feel slightly sorry for people who live in London. I still think the North is cool. I admire the North hugely, and I think it's much more inspiring, and I think there are far more interesting things going on. I think London has become very kind of sleek and complacent and overly glossy and pleased with itself.
I agree. I mean, I lived half my life in Liverpool. Until I was 40, I was staying in Liverpool. Now I'm 40 years in London. But I'm a Liverpoolian. You know, you live in Liverpool. I'm never going to be a Londoner, you know, at all. And you're right. I think things are... people go to London to where the money is, they think, you know.
Yeah.
Go to where the money is.
Well, that actually was one of the things, James, when I was reading your column. I was thinking about One Day, this new series on Netflix. And that's basically a whole story about people from different parts of the country feeling they had to move to London. That was the only way they were going to get on.
And there's a cultural centre of gravity in a way that, you know, I think if you wanted to get into the music industry, you could have gone to Manchester once upon a time. And I just don't think that exists anymore, which is really sad.
And it is weird because, you know, we're all more connected and all that. It's possible to work from play. You know, I suppose the BBC have moved to Salford and...
Yeah, and hopefully that catches on. It sort of does feel like that whole kind of northern music scene and all that kind of cultural stuff just doesn't have the same national resonance as it used to. Yeah.
India Knight and James Barrett there. You can read them in The Times and The Sunday Times every week. Just get yourself a subscription at thetimes.co.uk. Up next, how to make a good political impression.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Cross Wires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
The Big Thing.
Payment accepted. Thanks for shopping at Tesco.
So that is the sound of Rishi Sunak on my local Tesco's self-service checkout. I've thought it for a while. I thought it a few weeks ago, and every time I went in, I kept forgetting to record it. And this week, I finally got around to doing it. So here it is again. It's clearly Rishi Sunak is the voice of the self-service checkout.
Payment accepted. Thanks for shopping at Tesco.
It is definitely him. And there's another bit.
Assistance is coming. Please continue.
It's definitely him. Which got us thinking, why is it that I think the voice of the checkout sounds like Rishi Sunak? And how, if the checkout is doing an impression of the Prime Minister, how do you do political impressions? So today we are going to make a good political impression with some political impressionists. Joining me in the studio, John Coleshaw's here. John, how are you?
Hello there, Matt. That really is Rishi on the Tesco thing.
It really is.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Once you hear it, you can't not. And obviously, John, you'll know from Dead Ringers, and he was Boris Johnson in the Channel 4 docuseries Partygate. And on the line, we've got Deborah Stevenson. And Deborah, you've done... Well, you were on I think we last spoke to you around the newest Spitting Image, but you've done Dead Ringers and you're currently in a play called Party Games. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Hey, John. I see you.
Hello there. Lovely to have
there
you.
There we are.
Hello,
we can see you on
Zooms.
We are linked.
Hello.
We can see you on the Zooms. And we've got Rory Bremner, who you'll know from Bremner, Burn of Fortune, Mock the Week and The Imitation Game and much else. Hi, Rory.
Hello, Matt. Hi, everyone.
Hello, Rory.
I don't know what the collective noun for an impressionist is.
A rip-off.
A rip-off of impressionist.
That'll do.
That'll do. Now, John, why do I think that sounds like Rishi Sunak?
I think, you know, the timbre is right there, you know, unexpected item in the bagging area. I don't think that's me. It sort of sounds like that way when he's doing his wacky content for people, because this is how you communicate now. You know, payment accepted. Yeah. It's like that tone, isn't it? It's that style.
We spoke to this about you before. You're Rishi Sunak. You sort of start off sort of with Tony Blair.
Yes, you do. You know, you have the staccato, you know, sharper edges of Tony Blair. There they are. And then let the ice sculpture just melt a little bit. So it's a bit more syrupy, a little bit more doing that. Drop the T's, drop the H's, drop the letter G, that kind of thing. And then it's sort of there. And look, you know, the plan is working. Let's stick with it.
Very good. Right now,
and ever so slightly camp as well.
Yes. It is a bit camp.
Yes, there's that chirpiness in there, that swirl, that up and
you're
down.
You're twisting into Del Winton now.
Oh, now, yes, now that would be a lovely thing, wouldn't it? The plan is working, darling. Let's stick with it.
The plan is working does sound like a terrible game show.
Yeah, yes.
Come on down, the plan is working.
It's weird, isn't it? Because do you remember when we did John Major, John, and... Just that John Major was the sort of train spotter voice, but then with a bit of Julian Clary thrown in. So you had that, oh, yes, I know the times of all the trains. And then you softened it a little bit, and it became Tony Blair. So I don't know why it became John Major. I don't know why the Tory thing is to go hard and then go camp.
And I think it was all this Alistair who pointed out that, you know, you go back to the John Major voice and make it a bit tougher. He goes into Michael Caine. So
that's amazing. But I want to start at the very beginning. How do you get into this? How do you become a professional impressionist? Deborah, how did you... Was it the sort of classic class clown? You were doing impressions of teachers, or were you acting first? How did you get into it?
I started, the very, very first impression I ever did was Margaret Thatcher. And I used to say, when I become Prime Minister. But I was only six.
Wow.
So I sounded like, when I become Prime Minister. Rory, that was us,
more,
wasn't it?
More Bart Simpson than Margaret Thatcher. What about you, Rory? How did you get into it?
Oh, it was school, I think. It was that, and I was sports commentators, and living in Scotland, so it was Bill McLaren doing all the rugby stuff, and Robertson to Rutherford, Rutherford to Rennick, to someone else with an R at the beginning of their name that I can roll. So it was all that, and Richie Beno and the cricket commentators, and that's how it started. And then Cabaret Circuit in London, the time when Spitting Image and stuff was starting out. And actually, the first time I met John, we were both commentating at a cricket match. And John was doing, his Russell Crowe and his Stuart Hall. You don't do Stuart Hall now. But it was wonderful. And I think impressionists are fans. And we both grew up loving Mike Yarwood. So some of our impressions is, David Attenborough was probably, and our Robert Day was modelled on Mike Yarwood. And you start out as fans, and then you sort of graduate to the political impressions, because if you're doing impressions, it's nice to do people on authority and people who matter. So there's that element to it.
John?
Yes, exactly that. Exactly that. We all grew up with Mike Yarwood. You know, he was the governor, and things that you're a fan of, and things that you're inspired by, or things that you just want to have a little go at because they irritate you. Then you
Doctor
know,
Who, in your case.
Oh yes, exactly. Well, no, that was a great, great love. Yes, that was a great, great love. You know, Tom Baker really makes that impact, doesn't he?
Yes, and John Pertwee with that wonderful resonance.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I think it might be diplophonic, I don't know. But there we are, reverse the polarity.
These are so good. Now, I want to talk about some of the current crop there, because you've done your job major, you know, you've reached back to your job majors and your Tony Blairs. Somebody messaged in, Bill said, the current crop of politicians are so bland that I can't recognise them when they were speaking for themselves. Who your guests miss from the current lot if they lose their seats in the next election? But it's an interesting question that you know, there's not a lot between your Rishi Sunak and your Keir Starmer, is there?
Just a minute, I have to cut in here. Because we haven't just got bland, old, grey-haired men anymore. We've got people like me, Angela Rayner, the red-headed raver. Don't forget.
That's very good. I thought she was on the line then, Deborah.
Well, actually, I think, talking about voice relations, that kind of started off as an impression of John Bishop.
Right, so hang on. So, John, do you do your John Bishop? And then we'll see if we can get from that to Angela Rayner.
Yes, we'll sort of like cross a couple of borderlines, you know, from Liverpool to Manchester and see. So, yeah, John Bishop would be a little bit like that. And there's that sense of rhythm and attacking if you speed it up and, like, you know, bring a bit of Liam Gallagher in, then I'll hand the baton over to Zebs, you know what I mean?
That's right. I'm the third member of Oasis. But, you know, bring it over to sort of Warrington here, you're going to end up like this and a little bit angry.
Are we going into a period, Deborah, where there being slightly more women around in politics for you to get your teeth into, having been quite male for, I suppose there was Theresa May. Did you bother learning Liz Truss?
Well, I mean, my 44 days.
Took you longer to learn it than she was in Downing Street.
When it comes to ex-prime ministers, I think, you know, there is always, we're always there hanging around these days like a bad smell. not as bad. Tony Blair.
He's definitely still hanging about. What about Keir Starmer? Do either of you do Keir Starmer, John?
Yes, he's on Dead Ringers. Duncan Wisby does him, and
he's brilliant, Duncan.
And the contrast between Duncan's Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner is very funny. You know, there is, you know, Keir. You know, if it comes through, we will support it. And we will vote for it. And that kind, that rather turgid flavour of the geography supply teacher who can't keep order of the classroom.
What about you, Rory? Well, are you working on
it? Well, actually, I'm talking about that because Keir Starmer, Matt Ford, he's another, he does a good Keir Starmer. He says the way to do Keir Starmer is you just say the word the Metropolitan Police. And that was his sort of like way into a character because quite often it's, you know, you find a sort of phrase that particularly picks up on it, and that's always
working people. He's a big fan of working people.
They did
people.
A spitting image live when they had, I think it's to infinity, but in a practical way. It worked very well.
Went to the same.
Sorry, you cut off there.
Sorry, Deborah, your line is not absolutely brilliant, but go on.
I'm so sorry. We've lost. I don't like to interrupt, but it's Rachel Reeves here, and I went to the of elocution as Keir Starmer. That's why we both sound like zipping from rainbow.
We had a few weeks ago when we were doing PMQs, someone said that Keir Starmer sounded a bit like Zippy from Rainbow. I ended up doing Zippy. Tim Shipman did George from Rainbow. And then we actually had Zippy in. I'll be honest, I thought I sounded more like Zippy than Zippy did by the end. Is it possible to teach me how to do an impression?
Yes, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Come on, then. Who should we try?
Well, let's start with somebody nice and distinctive. Lindsay Hoyle.
Yes.
So, you know, that's the Lancashire accent. It curls up at the end like that. So put that curve in.
Curve.
That's right. You got curve. It straight off the bat there.
Curve.
Straight, that's it. Yeah. Now, you know, I apologise. It didn't turn out the way I wanted it to.
The fact of the matter is, he does that a lot, doesn't he? There's a lot of just words which aren't...
Yes.
Yeah,
And I believe he's from Chorley, so this is rather
Chorley
appropriate.
MP for Chorley. Yeah, I know. I feel very dangerous probably doing impressions of people from Chorley. I tell you what, let's listen to some of the other impressions that we've had sent in. So this is Elizabeth, who is in Switzerland. And she said, with all this speaker chat, everyone's talking about the common speaker. It reminded me of the summer when I was looking for a picnic table in Interlaken, the most times radio message we've had, when we found the English garden. We finished our snack and got the shock of our lives when throwing away our rubbish. And the bin said this.
Order!
So that is actually just John Burko. Was he better? Was he more fun to do, Rory, than Lindsay Hoyle?
I mean, I love that Lindsay Hoyle, by the way. He was always very petulant, wasn't he, John Burko? I mean, John will know that Lewis McLeod, did he do it on Dead Ringers?
Yes,
and it was all that, order! And he got more and more angry and stuff. But, so it's a good voice for a bin collection.
Quite what the logic is of the bin saying order when you put some rubbish in it. But
I think you should, Jonathan Ross would be close to your area because, you know, you've got that whole thing as to why they use, say the letter R.
You basically say, I can't pronounce my R's properly, Rory.
We're making it a home fixture. We're not going away. We're making it a home fixture. It's on your territory.
Thank you, Rory. This is a properly niche one that Eddie sent in.
Hello, Matt. It's Mark Drakeford here. Can you get me some Caerphilly cheese?
Now, I suppose it has
that's very good because it's going at 20 miles an hour.
What did you think of that one, Deborah?
Yes, probably going to be told off, I would imagine, for that one. Have to be a bit careful not to kind of show any kind of cultural appropriation there, I think. I think we stay off Caerphilly, we stay off leeks, and we stay off daffodils, and we talk about the real issues in Wales. I'm definitely no expert in that one. I think you need to turn to the boys for that. I'm more kind of, if anyone comes up and they want to do an Anne Widdecombe, I can probably help with that. I think John's been known to do that. I think it's one that you can do
by modulating your voice rather well.
So you do that as well, John. We have a widow come off.
I think I was doing Sissy and Ada, Les Dawson style when I was doing that. I think that's what I like. I do love that Mark Drakeford, though. The wonderful thing about Mark Drakeford is the sense of pluck, you know, that sense of... and the wonderfulness of the Welsh accent is that every syllable is used, is maximised. That's
something.
The beauty of it, yeah.
It does also have the advantage...
Alex Jones, and then you just come like that, so you just...
It does have the advantage, Roy, that most people don't know what Mark Drakeford really sounds like. So as long as it's a sort of passable Welsh accent, you're probably all right.
That's true. I mean, but that's the case with a lot of the cabinet, because if you're Jeremy Hunt, I don't think Jeremy Hunt's wife knows what he sounds like. it's shallow pickings. I was so glad that David Cameron came back. I've got to say, it's nice to have a little bit of diversity. You know, you've got a prime minister of East African heritage. We've got a business secretary from Nigeria. We've got a mixed race home secretary because, you know, his mother's from Sierra Leone. So I think it's good to have some diversity and to come back, because a lot of people, you know, they're starting out at Eton and they need something to aim at.
Well, okay, let's turn our attention to some more. This one is probably a back up your street, Deborah. This is an impression from Chris.
You turn if you want to. The lady's not for turning.
That's good, isn't it? That sounds like Steve Nallon.
Yeah, it's up there. Yeah,
very
Steve's
good.
That one,
really
it?
Good, that one. Absolutely. And then this is Sally.
Advisors are there to advise. Ministers Ooh. Are there to decide.
They're both good. Ooh, we're terrified.
Yeah.
We're terrified.
Yeah. A little. The lady is not to be impersonated.
Very good. So who do we think was the best out of those two, Chris and Sally?
Oh, my goodness.
They were both really good, weren't they?
Yeah.
Really,
I think in the male category, Chris was very good, and in the female category, Sally.
Yeah. All right, prizes for all.
And the beauty of them both is they were really quite different, but they were both
Thatcher. Both recognisable.
That's the fascinating thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, let's jump now. This is, I think we've got now one from Anthony. Can we hear Anthony's impression?
Good morning, Matt. I listen to your brilliant show, and your esteemed colleagues all the time. From my while I do my plowshare. Got to go, cheerio, blah, 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 blah.
I see what you're doing there.
It's not bad, that.
Yeah,
it's
a slight
impression of an impression, isn't it?
Yes, I thought it had all of, you know, the certain rambunctiousness, and they were there as well in great operation. So I think that's how I wished I sounded.
Yeah.
You know, then there'd be a bit more order if I did.
Let's move on, because I've got another one. This is Michael Evans sent in this one.
Good morning, Matthew. Former leader of the Conservative Party and Times Radio star attraction William Hague here. People ask me about impressions and I tell them I've been doing an impression of myself for the past 25 years. Anyway, I'm off for boiled eggs with Fionn now. I'll be on my usual breakfast slot next week. So I'll see you next Tuesday.
That's what they're referring to. He appears on Times Radio on a Tuesday, so we'll gloss over that. And then Anne McManus sent this in. It's from her husband, but we don't know what the husband's called, but this is what Anne sent in.
I'm surprised to see so many Liberal Democrats gathered together without there being a by-election in the offing. I had looked around the chamber and wondered whether one of us might not be very well.
Also quite good.
Yeah, that's a gentle William Hague. I think it's true that as voices go on and with the passage of time, some voices do mature like a fine old whiskey. And I think that's happened with William Hague very beautifully.
I think, Matt, we had William Hague on the Imitation Game, and we had me and John and William Hague in a Hague off, and William Hague came third.
That is true.
We what a wonderful sort of version of the Bee Gees we made.
It's sort of weird.
How deep is your love?
We have to record this now, Rory.
Yeah,
we have to do it.
It's a Christmas number one. It's a Christmas number one in the making.
Can you do a version of Staying Alive, John?
Staying Alive.
We could do a version of Wet Life and call it Past Life.
It's weird, because in a way, your impressions of him sound more like William Hague than William Hague does. He's so familiar that you're able to dial it up. more because we know exactly what you're doing.
Yes, I guess we pick out the bits that are recognisable and exaggerate them like a caricaturist would do so visually.
Yeah.
And we do it in the audio style and just take those things which are familiar and then extrapolate them to the nth degree.
In fact, I once heard David Cameron doing a very good William Hague. I can't remember. It was in Cornwall. He was doing an event in Cornwall and someone did a William Hague impression, talked about being in Europe but not won by Europe. And he got up and said, well, first of all, my William Hague impression is much better than yours. And it completely destroyed this guy who otherwise thought he'd come up with a very clever question. Right, let's move on. We've got, this is another one from Mike.
I have nothing to offer you about blood, sweat, toil and tears. And if the British Empire should last 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Is that Kemi Badenoch? It's a very good Churchill.
It's a very good. There's not much use for that these days. But the other thing that... I just really love the fact that people across the country are sitting in their kitchens with their phones, like doing their... giving us their Winston.
It's amazing, this one.
I love it.
Boris Johnson thought that was him, though. You know, he thought he was hearing himself, right?
that is very much the case. But I love the fact that we're reaching back to Churchill and Maggie. It's like impressionists always get asked if Frank Spencer is still, you know, and they think that was 20 or 30 years ago. So
Frank Spencer and Mavis from Coronation Street. Go on, Temper, give us a Mavis.
Well, I don't really know. I only know what Les Dennis sounded like.
Yeah, exactly. No one can remember. We're not even sure if Mavis existed. We just know that Les Dennis.
Deborah's brilliant with the Coronation Street. I did that play, you know, quiz, which is based on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I had to be Chris Tarrant. I get this stuff from Chris Tarrant every week. Saying, you're absolutely nothing like. Who are you being? No one. And I needed Hilda Ogden, and Deborah was just absolutely brilliant.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, it's so good. So good. We've had a clip of David Cameron doing William Hague.
We all remember those lyrical tones in a hall like this all those years ago. Some of you won't be here in 30 years' time.
He's gone Lancashire there.
Yes,
hasn't he gone?
Yeah, I don't think he should give up his day job, although I wish he would, you know.
Yes, it was
play it again, Matt.
Yeah.
Matt, play it again. You'll hear it's Lancashire rather than Yorkshire. Listen.
All those years ago, some of you won't be here in 30 years' time.
Yeah, he's got Lindsay Hoyle, isn't he?
It's like a Rochdale Jeff
boycott. You won't be here in 30 years' time.
Well, Yorkshire's a little bit wider.
Well, John fooled Tony Blair with that, didn't you, John?
Well, yes, it was never the intention, but yes, when I just started, with the Hague voice, and I was working on the Steve Penk show, who did famous calls,
yeah,
and we just happened to call through one Wednesday to Downing Street, and Prime Minister's Questions Day, yeah. So it was...
Nothing much on.
Yeah. And not unusual for the Leader of the Opposition to call through to the Prime Minister.
And you were being William Hague, trying to get through, and you got through to Tony Blair?
Yes, that's right. The switchboard just sort of all was quite normal and put us through. Yeah. And yeah, there was Blair, you know, ha, 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 ha. I said, hello, Tony. Which William Hague never did. He always called him Prime Minister in that lovely sardonic way.
Yeah. Very good. Well, we've got some more from beyond the grey. Oh, let's go. We've got some non-political ones. Anita has sent in this one.
For people who behave that sort of way, it's the way they behave. Maggie Smith, looking askance at the politics. Thank you.
Very good. That is really, really good. Can we have that again? Let's have that again.
For people who behave that sort of way, it's the way they behave. Maggie Smith, looking askance at the politics. Thank you.
We knew that was Maggie Smith before the name was announced.
Exactly.
That's the first thing. And when the voice puts the image in your mind's eye and you can see them, that's the other.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
You can see the quaver was there. Because she always seems to look as though she's sort of doing a pigeon impression herself. coming in and coming out again in a rather outraged way.
So she hasn't just got the quaver, she's got the full packet of crisps.
There. That was really, really good. Shall we end in with well, an item that no other radio station will be doing? Shall we have a battle of the Neil Kinnocks? This is right bang up to date. This is Chris.
Lovely, 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 marvellous board to me.
Thank you for that, Chris. And then this one was from Phil.
Why am I the only member in a long line of Kinnocks to take advantage of club card prices?
That's very good. Good material.
Yeah, and it's good he smuggled in the name there so we knew who it was. Who do you think was the best of those, Deborah?
Oh, I couldn't possibly say. I mean, they were good, again, in different ways. And that's what I always love about people's impressions. Yeah. You find different things, don't you, different people. I think the boys would be more of an authority on this.
Go on, then.
Neil Kinnock.
Well, I think the first one was the great pub impression version. Yeah. You know, lovely, lovely, lovely. Just, you know, do the catchphrase and be done with it.
Basically just Welsh again. It's like Mark Drakeford, but with more energy.
It was lovely seeing Neil.
He had
Neil
two voices though, didn't he?
Yes,
Neil Kinnock
right,
had
yes.
two voices. He had his conference voices. People running around in taxis, delivering redundancy notices to their own workers. There was that. And then there was his quiet Radio 4 Today program.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Very low, very low. And see,
yes.
So, you know, politicians, they sometimes, you know, they have the loud conference voice and they have the quiet voice.
Very good.
That is completely correct. You've got this one here. Where I turn on my charm to make peace
yes.
with Russia. Yes.
Her slower, sexy voice.
Here's one for you, Matt.
Go on.
What do you get when you cross Tony Blair with Chris Tarrant? You get Ed Miliband. Those are my pledges. I'm never going to give you up. I'm never going to let you down. I'm never going to turn around and desert you.
Very, 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 very good. We've had so many messages and WhatsApps and people just saying... they've heard David's just making weird noises in the office listening along to the show. People have enjoyed it so much. Who do you love doing? Let's have like your favourite impression. You like, they don't have to be political. Just come around. Deborah, who do you want to give us first?
It's so hard, but always tends to come down to Lorraine Kelly in the end. I don't know why, but you know it. So nice. So nice.
She's so nice. So
you have a wonderful morning.
Roy.
Good for you.
Oh, I don't know. I've always enjoyed doing Billy Connolly. That was always great fun.
Oh.
Bill Clinton gave you the license to be just a little bit naughty. And now it's Donald Trump because everyone picks it up because it's got to be the best. I don't think there's one better. I'm even in court. It's that good.
You're making impressions great again.
Everybody can do them.
Yes. I would say I'd probably
does a Trump.
Everybody, but not in that sort of way. I loved the sense of Marilyn with your one. That was very beautiful. for me, I think
so much again. It can turn into that, and then I've fallen in love with the president.
Oh my God.
We should do this every week.
We should. Honestly, you'd be very welcome. Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Somebody's asked, "Can you do it? Can any of you do an impression of me?"
Okay. Well, we would go back to the Jonathan Wass thing guy. This would be Matt Shirley on Times Radio. Thank you very much. Wonderful show. I would have thought. Thank you. Good night.
Roy.
Well, no. Yes. You'll have to give me a little bit more time on that. I'll come and see your stand-up show, which I think is starting next month.
It's very kind of you to say so. Well, yeah, Bristol next week, next Friday. I mean, so we'd finish off with perhaps the silliest of all the impressions that we had sent in. This is from Kendall Lee.
I'm not very good at impersonation, so I used to be able to impersonate Cliff Richard, but that was a long time ago. I used to do that in the dinner queue for 50 pence a go, I think. But I can impersonate a humpback whale. That's the only thing I can do. And here it is. I hope that made you smile.
And there it is. And we won't translate what the whale was saying.
Oh, terrific. Honestly, we can stay doing this all day.
That.
All
Our
day.
Cameras have now reached the very bottom of the ocean. In hindsight, we should have tied them more securely.
Oh gosh.
Oh, what an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll do this again. We'll get some more in.
Oh, it's huge
from listeners, and we'll have you on.
It's a few months ago, Rory and I had a long car trip, and the whole conversation, the whole journey was just like this. And it made the trip go so quickly.
Flew by. Yeah. Lovely. John Coleshaw, Deborah Stevenson, Rory Bennett, thanks so much for joining us. Really good to see you.
And if you want to send your own impressions or thoughts or just moans on a voice note, you can WhatsApp me 033 003 2353. That's 033 003 2353. For now, for me, Matt Jolly, it's goodbye.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.